Jesus, the God, invites us here to his triumphal feast.
Welcome to the Triumphal Feast Podcast, a ministry of Elder Bryce Lawrence, speaking to you from Brentwood Hills Primitive Baptist Church in Fort Worth, Texas.
Now, there were a lot of Israelites taken captive, but these four chose not to go the way of the world. They chose to continue following the Lord. They realized while they were there that Israel had forsaken God and they needed to fix it. And so why keep going the way of the world? Need to turn paths and go back the other way.
Words he says to every humble.
You turn with me in your Bibles to the book of Daniel. This morning I would like to speak to you out of Daniel chapter 3. We're going to do a summary in a moment of the first couple of chapters, but I want to begin this morning in Daniel chapter 3, verse 19. My message to you this morning is standing up in a bow down world. When all of the world decides that it's going to do things its own way, we as disciples of Christ need to be different. We need to have a different motivation. We need to have a different understanding of our responsibility and purpose in this world. We need to look different. We need to think differently. We need to act differently, regardless of the consequences. We need to be all in for the Lord. And so this morning I want to go to a familiar account that I think even our children know well, and that's the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We're going to pick up the account here in Daniel chapter 3, verse 19, with the rage and fury of King Nebuchadnezzar. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 17 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen and their hats, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. This fellow was mad. King Nebuchadnezzar was extremely angry to the point of killing these men, or attempting to kill these men. We all know the end of the story. Attempting to kill these men, but killing some of his own soldiers in the meantime. Well, how'd this happen? Well, let's flash back a few years. Daniel chapter 3 is about 3 or 4 years into the time of the captivity. In Daniel chapter 1, it's around the year 605 BC. Nebuchadnezzar decides that he wants to invade Israel. Now, back up a little bit more than that. The only way Nebuchadnezzar is able to do that is because God allowed it to happen. And the reason God allowed it to happen is because once again, Israel stopped listening to God and started going along with the world. And just like he allowed them to be taken captive by the Assyrians, the Lord allows Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon to come in and take captive some folks. Now, this was just the initial attack that Nebuchadnezzar does. And what he does is he comes in with such a great force that there's not much resistance at all. And he takes captive the smartest people that he can find in Israel, because he's got a plan for them. He's going to train all of the wise men of Israel in the ways of the Chaldeans, and he's going to educate them 3 years, and they're going to become ministers in his court. Basically, what he is going to try and do with Israel is what he's done with other nations, and that is to take them over from the inside, to take them over by influencing their leaders and influencing the professors of the colleges so that they come over to the way of the Babylonians. Well, we find that in this group that was taken captive was a man named Daniel and three other fellows who had some other names, but they end up being Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Early on in their three-year training, the king's professor of sorts, the man that was responsible for teaching them, says that we're going to provide you with the greatest feast every single day, every single meal. We're going to provide you with the king's best horses. We're going to provide you with the best place to sleep. And most of all, we're going to provide you with the best food you've ever had in your life. Daniel knows something's up. He knows that this king is trying to influence their minds by giving them something that their body likes. And so he makes a deal with this keeper, this professor. He says, you allow me and these three fellas to just eat pulse while everybody else is eating all of the king's dainty meals. And you check us out at the end of 10 days and see how we're doing. And if it looks like we're sick, then we'll join in with you. All right, now, pulse. The nicest definition that I could find of that, you know, people would say that it's vegetables. That's not like going down to Kroger and buying the really nice vegetables underneath the fountains. You know, they spray the water on them every 30 minutes or so. This is basically horse feed. Daniel says, let us eat basically what the animals eat and see if in 10 days we're not healthy. And if we're not, then we'll give in and we'll go along with the rest of the crowd. Well, we know that they won that argument. We know that when they came back and checked on him, they were healthier. They'd actually looked like they'd gained some weight. And they began being blessed by the Lord with wisdom beyond everybody else. Now, there were a lot of Israelites taken captive, but these four chose not to go the way of the world. They chose to continue following the Lord. They realized while they were there that Israel had forsaken God and they needed to fix it. And so why keep going the way of the world? Need to turn paths and go back the other way. And so the Lord blessed them with wisdom beyond all of the other people that had been taken captive. And not only that, Daniel was given the gift of being able to see visions, whether in a dream or whether he was awake. And he could interpret other people's dreams, not just his own, but other people's dreams as well. Daniel was blessed with that. And they brought him before King Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar, no doubt, gave him some kind of test to see how smart they were. And his record was that they are 10 times better than my own magicians. Not only were they better than all of the Israelites, but in their 3 years of supposedly studying the way of the Babylonians, they had also been praying to God and were blessed beyond the wisdom and powers of the sorcerers and magicians of Babylon, so much so that King Nebuchadnezzar recognized that. We come over to chapter 2. Everything so far is somewhat peaceful. Yes, they've been taken captive, but they understand their position, and they're given positions in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar dreams a dream that's so bad that it wakes him up from his sleep and scares him so bad that he can't even remember what the dream was. It frightened him that horribly. And so he says, I need somebody to tell me why I'm so scared. I need somebody to tell me what this dream was that has scared me so badly, and then tell me what the dream means. So he calls in his sorcerers. He calls in his magicians. He calls in the wise men of Babylon. And he says, tell me my dream and the interpretation of it, or you're toast. Basically, that's what he says. He said, I'm going to kill you, and I'm going to wipe out your house. It's going to be like you've never even been there. And the wise men said, well, tell us the dream, and we'll tell you what it means. And king says, I can't remember. That's the point. That's why I have you here. You have to tell me the dream and what it means. Now, if you were one of those magicians, what would you say? Dude, you're crazy. I might be able to kind of figure out what you're talking about if you would at least tell me the dream. But you won't even tell me the dream. He says, "Oh, king, it's impossible." In verse 10, notice what one of the men says. This is Daniel 2 and 10. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, "There is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore, there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh." What were these wise men's vision of gods? They were something distant. So the only person, there is nobody on earth, they say, the only thing that could do what you're asking, king, to tell you your dream and then tell you what it means are the gods. And oh, by the way, they don't have anything to do with us. Well, you know, they were actually right. The gods of this world don't have anything to do with you. They're serving themselves. They're not here to help you. They're not going to bless you with the knowledge that you need. All right, so we've got Nebuchadnezzar that's not really mad, but apparently the guy's kind of bipolar. Okay, he gets so mad so quickly, so instantly, that he has this dream. It throws him into a rage, and he says, "Okay, I need some relief from this." He calls in his wise men and says, "You got to tell me my dream. You got to tell me what it means. And if you don't, I'm going to kill you." They can't tell him. So he orders not only the men that came in there to be killed, but every wise man in Babylon, including Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He wants them all dead. So if these guys can't do it, these are obviously got to be my best. Here's the danger of rage. You're going to sometimes forget what you've already said. One chapter before, he said, there were these four guys that were 10 times greater than all my wise men. Why didn't he start with them? Because he wasn't thinking. He was acting in anger and in fear. And brethren, when we do that, we're not going to be making good choices. Don't ever make big decisions out of fear and wrath and anger. Take some time. So he sends out his captains to basically assassinate every wise man that they could find. And they come to the house of Daniel. And Daniel says, "Whoa, man, why are you so mad? What's gone on with the king that all of a sudden he was happy with us and now he wants to kill us?" Captain tells him, "Well, the king dreamed a dream. It scared him. He can't remember the dream. And so he wants somebody to tell him what the dream was and what it means. And since nobody can do that, he wants you all dead because you're all useless to him." Daniel says, "Let me go talk to him. Get me some time with the king and let me see if I can help." So the captain brings Daniel in. And Daniel asked the king, "What's wrong?" He said, "I had this dream. I don't remember it, but it scared me so bad I woke up and I forgot the dream. And I've got to know what this dream was and what it means." Daniel doesn't say, "That's impossible." Daniel doesn't say, "Well, let me see if I can figure this out." What does Daniel do? Right there in front of the king, I don't know if whether he does it verbally or if he does it in his head, Daniel prays. Because Daniel knows that it is impossible for men to do, but with God, all things are possible. So Daniel prays. And he interprets, not only does he remember the dream, but he interprets the dream for Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is absolutely astounded. But I want you to notice something specifically about what Daniel said. Verse 28 of Daniel chapter 2. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets. What do the Chaldeans, the sorcerers, say? Only the gods can do this, and they don't dwell with flesh. They won't have anything to do with us. They can't help. But Daniel says, there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. And he gives the interpretation of it. By the way, here's why it disturbed Nebuchadnezzar so greatly. The dream was the fall of Babylon. The dream was how Nebuchadnezzar was going down, how Cyrus was coming in to take over, and Persia was going to conquer that whole area. It goes even further than that. But the fear that came upon Nebuchadnezzar is he dreamed his own demise. He dreamed the end of his own kingdom. Daniel tells him that plainly. Now, think about how the court jesters normally work. You know, they're there to entertain. The magicians were there to tell the king things that he wanted to hear. Okay? It's basically like the president's yes men. He surrounds himself with people that will say things that he likes to hear that make him feel good about what he is doing in his kingdom and conquering other nations. That was the job of the wise men. Daniel comes in, and rather than placating the king, rather than saying things to the king that he wants to hear, Daniel tells him the worst possible news. Daniel, at this point, could have said, well, here's your dream. Made up a dream and then interpreted it. Daniel could have remembered the actual dream and then gave another interpretation. Because honestly, he's saying, king, this means you're going to die. Your kingdom's gone. The guy was about to kill him anyway. Look at the courage and faith of Daniel here to tell the truth while the very sword that's going to cut him in half is probably 5 feet away in the hands of a captain. But he doesn't. Daniel knows he is there for a purpose. He knows that the visions that he sees and the ability to interpret dreams that he can comes from the Lord. And if he were to misuse that gift, that would be a drastic mistake for himself and for all of Israel. Verse 46. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel. There's some gross misunderstanding about the power of men right there. And commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. Nebuchadnezzar wanted to kill the guy. Now he wants everybody to worship him. Daniel no doubt refuses these things. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Look at the testimony that Nebuchadnezzar gives. First of all, he said that Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are 10 times better than all his magicians. Now he says of Daniel's God, of a truth, that your God is a God of gods and Lord of kings. So Daniel, you're worshiping a God that is more powerful than any other God. He is the God of all the gods, and he is the Lord, the ruler of all the kings of the earth. Where does Nebuchadnezzar put himself? A Lord of kings? Isn't he a king? Nebuchadnezzar, at that moment, when he sees what Daniel is able to do by the blessing of God, he declares, "This God is even over me." Wow. He makes Daniel basically second in command in Babylon after that. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are governors of smaller provinces. The Lord blessed them to raise up in this world that's full of sin. Now we pick up the account in Daniel chapter 3. Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. What? He just said that the God of Daniel is the God of gods and the Lord of kings. And now he sets up a giant 100-foot idol for people to worship. What's the matter with this guy? Well, from our studies, we've learned he's what? He's blockhead. He's not learning from what he sees and hears. Okay, so this statue is between 90 and 100 feet tall and about 10 to 15 foot wide. Huge. And he gathers together everybody and says, "This is what's going to happen. I have set up this God, this idol, for you to worship. And I'm going to have people declare when it's time for you to come and worship. And you're going to hear all sorts of instruments of music start to play. And when that happens, everybody's going to come together and everybody's going to bow down to my God at the same time." Regardless of what the image looked like, it represents Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? Regardless of whether the statue looked like him or if it was just a stone pillar, it represents Nebuchadnezzar. So he has gone from declaring the God of Israel to be the God of gods to setting up a 100-foot-tall statue, building a mega church worship service complete with motivational speakers and the rock band of the day. Man, what's the matter with this guy? Complete turnaround. And you know what? For the fear of the king, the entire nation does it. Anybody that's in that province, when they hear that band going, they come gather together and they bow down and they worship. Even all the Israelites that were taken captive as wise men, except for 4 of them. These same 4 guys just won't go along with the crowd.
Victorious God, what can we?
We hope that this edition of Triumphal Feast has been a blessing to you. Please join us again soon for the conclusion of the message, Standing Up in a Bow Down World.
Our song.